You're listening to the Wells Tech Podcast, where we talk about technology that can serve the church and its work of spreading the gospel. Wells Tech is a part of the podcast network on Streams, the internet media site sponsored by the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Join the conversation by visiting our podcast website at wellstech.wells.net. Welcome to episode 61 of the Wells Tech Podcast for Wednesday, March 4th, 2009. The five don'ts. It is time again for the Wells Tech Podcast. We are on episode 61 for March 4th. 2009. We're very glad that you have decided to tune in again to listen to us talk about technology, but specifically about how that could impact your ministry. I'm joined again, as usual, by my co-host, Sally Draper. Good morning, Sally.
Good morning, Martin. How are things in Milwaukee this morning?
The sun is shining. I'm hearing that there'll be a warm-up. It was really crazy yesterday as south of Milwaukee, they had 15 or so inches of snow.
Wow.
North of Milwaukee, we had nothing. So fortunately, in this case, I live north of Milwaukee, and I had nothing. So how are things in Sleepy Eye?
Well, we're looking for a warm-up, too. Today's kind of a cloudy day, but ready for some nice weather for the rest of the week. And we're coming off of a wonderful Parents' Day at school. We're having Lutheran School Week this week, and just things couldn't be better. We're enjoying it. We had a school play and lots of fun activities. The kids are real excited. So good times here in Sleepy Eye.
Wonderful. That's great.
Yeah.
And on top of all that, we get to do a podcast today.
Yeah, lucky us. Get to talk about our favorite subject, which is technology and its uses in ministry, which I'm daily stunned at the things that people are doing out there and the effective use of technology that they have, making use of on their website and through all different methods to further their ministry efforts.
Yep. And I think one of the most enjoyable parts for me is the feedback that we get throughout the course of the week. It seems like the community feedback section is predominating or dominating our conversation these days. We just get so much, and that's going to be the case today. We've got six or seven pieces of feedback through various mechanisms, and I think that shows that that people are interested and want to share what they've experienced and have questions and want to share different things that they've tried and succeeded with. So that's really what I had hoped the show would become, and it has become that. So, but we typically take a topic of the day, and we have a topic that we've chosen. We introduced it last week a little bit. I mentioned that I had been working on a workshop for the Commission on Evangelism. Each year they roll out a congregation leaders workshop that is run across the country. They get congregations together that come into a location, and they meet for a half day, and they work through a particular concept. The one that's going on this year is called Connecting to Communities. The one that they asked me to write has now been titled Reaching Out in a Digital World. In essence, it's how to use technology to reach out, which jives nicely with the concept of this show. So we thought we'd take a few tidbits from that workshop and discuss them here on the show, so you get a little bit of a preview for what the workshop will be, which is going to be rolled out later this fall or summer and fall. And I guess it goes throughout the entire year. So we're just going to take a segment that I call the five don'ts when building an evangelistic website. One of the big sections when you're talking about reaching out in a digital world is what you're doing with your website. And we talk about it a lot on this show, Sally. But I've come up with five don'ts, and then maybe a later show we'll talk about the five do's. But there are five don'ts when building an evangelistic website. And let's start right off with those five don'ts. Number one is don't integrate or push together internal and external communication. So don't mix the two. When I say internal communications, what I mean is communication that is meant specifically for congregation members, the insider, as it were. And I would suggest that most of our Wells websites really major on internal communications. You have all kinds of acronyms on the homepage and meetings and those kinds of things. And then, of course, external communications would be for the prospect, the person, the church shopper potentially that's considering your church, but is before they're doing that, they're going to come to your website. So that's don't number one.
So, Martin, I just think it would make it more concrete for our listeners if we could give some examples and also just how you go about doing that, because you just have the one website typically. So how do you have these two different audiences that you're serving? And I think, you know, one thing that we can look at is our final web service that the Synod has partnered with and many of our congregations are using for their websites. And on final web, you have the ability to have these separate sub-sites. Mm-hmm. So you actually could dedicate an entire set apart site for your church website visitors to give them more of the information that's more visitor or external communication oriented. And that's a really good way to do it.
Right. Addressing is always a concern when I bring this topic up at workshops that I do and conferences that I do. Well, how do we do this as far as the URL is concerned? And I would suggest that your external communication website, and again, they can exist on the same within the same platform, like we mentioned with Final Web with subsites. The external should be basically your churchname.com, whatever that is, you know, gracelutheran.org or whatever. What you can do, though, with the technology that's available through Final Web and through most any other hosting service, is create that subsite either with a distinct name or with a slash, you know, so it could be yourchurchname.com/members or members.yourchurchname.com. Or you could even have a totally separate URL that would still point to a subsite on your site. So you're not having to maintain really two different websites. So it could be www.yourchurchnamemembers.com or something like that, because it's a lot easier to advertise those internal sites to your internal members than it is to the outside world. So I think that would be a way to do that. So what we're really saying is you want to kind of tuck the membership information out of the way or out of the view of the visitors. So it's at least a couple clicks away. Now, you want to click, obviously, on your homepage to that member information, but essentially that homepage, yourchurchname.com, really needs to provide information that would be of interest to the church visitor. So obviously, you need the basics. You need your church service times, your location, that kind of stuff. But devotional material, confessional material, what your church teaches, what it believes, some of the programs that might be of interest, a school obviously would be something that a church visitor might be interested in.
And maybe even some multimedia type things, maybe mm-hmm. a short video that introduces the congregation and some of the programs that you have there and things like that. That would be a good front page or site visitor kind of mm-hmm. information.
Yep. So that's don't number one. Don't mix internal and external communications. Don't number two is don't oversell your church. The point that we're trying to make with don't number two is the visitor, if they come to your church, is going to know soon enough what your church is really like. So if you try and oversell it on your website, so you try and make yourself look bigger than you are, I think you're kind of at odds with the objective of trying to give your visitor an immersive experience of what it's going to be like to come to your church. So resist the temptation, because it's easy to do on the web, because you can make yourself look like anything you'd like.
That's true. You can build up lots of expectations there, and unfortunately they're going to find out the truth when they actually visit your congregation. So you want to be careful there.
So on your website, obviously you want to accentuate the positive, and I think that's easily done on the web as well. So you determine in your planning process, really, what should we be highlighting in our church? What is a visitor going to find that's going to be of interest to them? What's going to attract them? And then obviously play that up on the website, as opposed to trying to make things look a little bit different or a little bit better than maybe they are. Don't number three is don't forget about your content.
This is a biggie, huh? Yeah.
So your website can look just awesome. It can look beautiful. But if you don't have solid content and content that is fresh and changing, that visitor's not going to return to the website or probably visit your church.
Right. And I think this is true for all of us. If you visit a website and you see last updated March 2nd, 2004, you know, in some date field that happens to be on the webpage, then you're going to think twice before you really think it's a very valid site, basically. So, yep. Pretty obvious thing, but very true that having a website takes a lot of work and it takes a lot of continual updating. But there are some easy ways to do that, or some things that can help you. You know, you mentioned earlier, Martin, about including biblical devotional materials and that kind of thing. And a lot of that can be added to your webpage and dynamically updated on a regular basis using RSS feeds. And we've talked about RSS before, but if you aren't using RSS for your website and for your personal reading, it's something you should really look into. RSS stands for Really Simple Syndication, and it's basically a way to bring updated web content to you instead of having to go and look for it. Mm-hmm. So you can bring it to your website and display it automatically every time, for instance, our daily devotion changes on the wells.net site. It can change on your church website as well. And you can bring it to your personal RSS reader in the same way. Yep. So really cool technology. We have some great how-to information out on the wells.net website, and I'll be sure and include a link to that in our show notes. And I also have a sample final web page. Final web users have it really easy because you can integrate Wells RSS feeds really with a click of the mouse. It's very simple to do. And I have a final web page where I built all the different RSS feeds that are available from wells.net, so you can see it in action, basically.
Cool. And we can provide a link to that.
Definitely.
Awesome. Yeah, this happens on a number of different levels, and we're going to talk about this when we talk about the do's in a future episode as well. But your church is very dynamic. You're doing things all of the time, and some of those things may be of interest to that web visitor. So what I would call events, whether it be a sermon series, a new Bible class study, a VBS, whatever it is, your website needs to reflect the changing nature and all of the new things that are going on within your church. That's what keeps visitors coming back. They're saying, hey, what's new? What's coming up this week? Maybe there's something that's going to be of interest to me. You never know what that's going to be. So it's really important to dedicate enough time and energy to keeping that website up to date rather than inviting people to join you at the Brewers game for 2006, the 2006 season. So that's number three. Go ahead, Sally.
Just one more note there. I think a good thing to couple with that, besides keeping it up to date, is reminding people that they can go there and find the up to date information. So kind of a communication plan offline that points mm-hmm. people to the website on a regular basis.
Yep. And this is as important for external as it is for internal communications. If you want your members coming to your site, your calendar better be accurate. So you've got to spend the time making sure that things are up to date if the website is a part of your communication strategy. And I think it should be for most congregations and schools. So we're up to don't number four, Sally, and that's don't let the visitor leave without knowing why you exist. So, Sally, what doesn't that mean?
Well, it doesn't mean to put your mission statement on your
page. Yeah. The beloved mission statement. Yeah. Why don't we want to do that? Why don't we want to put our mission statement right in the middle of the homepage?
Well, I don't think that really conveys who you are and what you are in a visual and immersive way.
A memorable way, probably.
Absolutely.
Either.
You know, I'm a teacher at heart, and I do a lot of training for the Synod. And one of the things I do when I design a training program is I think about what I want them to leave with, what I want them to remember when they're done with the training. And I think we could apply that same concept here. What is that message that that we want people to get from our church, and that obviously is the message of Christ crucified, you know, for us and, mm-hmm. and our salvation won. And that's what we need to convey when they visit our site. That's what they need to know when they come and visit us.
Yep. I always encourage people considering these websites and how they're crafting it is, what's the one, two, or three words that visitor is going to leave with, that stick in their mind when they leave that website? Is it friendly? This church is friendly. Is it Bible-based? Is it positive, caring, negative? Whatever it is, that's really the goal. And the mission statement, we said, you know, mission statement is probably not a good tool for that, because the mission statement is usually 2, 3, 4 sentences. Even if it's well-crafted, that's not all that memorable, especially for somebody just looking around. Now, I think you want that on your site, and that should be a part of your message to the visitor. If you want to know a little bit more, this is what we stand for. But really, that visitor is not going to be there that long. So spend the time thinking about what are the two or three words you want stuck in their minds by the time they leave the website. Don't, number five, last but not least, don't let the visitor leave without knowing what your church is like. That means that you've got to think long and hard about what goes on that site. And the word that I like to use is immersive. And that's more and more possible today. So if your website is just text, no pictures, no audio, no video, I would say that's not very immersive, as much as a newspaper isn't very immersive. But you have the tools. We have the technology, Sally, to make this more of an immersive experience.
That's right. And I'm thinking about a lot of church websites that I visit, and I get immersed in what the outside brick structure of that website looks like.
Yeah.
And that's not a super friendly way to introduce
lot.
People.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what we want to see is people, and we want to hear their voices, and we want to see their images, and we want to, you know, see them living that life of faith and being a part of the fellowship of your congregation. And that's, you know, tuning into all of those multimedia tools that we talk about on this podcast on a regular basis. Maybe have that short video clip or some audio podcasting or whatever to help people, you know, feel like they know what your congregation is like. They see you as a friendly church and somewhere that they would fit in just really well.
Yep. They're going to ask the question when they come to your site, what's it going to be like if I visit this church? Because they're visiting your website for a reason, and they're trying to figure out, you know, is this a place I'm going to feel comfortable? Is this a place I'm going to enjoy going to? And that really needs to be behind how you put together that website, that immersive experience. So use every tool at your disposal, but obviously do it well, because that will say a lot about your church and how much you care as well, you know, that immersive experience. So I would always express caution, because this is the hard part. As hard as creating content is, this is also going to take a lot of work if you're going to do it well. So, but well worth it. So,
you know, Martin, I'm reminded of just words of wisdom that were shared with my husband as he was a pastoral student studying for the public ministry. You know, for people that visit your church, you typically get them on site in your congregation for 1 hour a week. Mm-hmm. So you better do worship well. You know, it's a good idea to put a lot of focus on the worship experience and do it with good quality and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And the same would be true, you know, for those that visit your site virtually via your website. It's worth the investment, and it's worth the time, even though it is going to take some major work behind it to get, you know, a really evangelical and welcoming website built for your church.
You have to remember that the prospect or the potential visitor or church shopper, they're making a decision at this point. They are determining, am I going to visit and give up my anonymity? Right now, when they're in front of their computer, they are totally anonymous. They can click around. They can, you know, if there's a sermon that they can view or listen to or Bible class or look at pictures of the church interior or its people, they're making judgment. Do I want to give up my anonymity and go and visit this congregation? Is it going to be worth it? Because that's what scares people. Now people are going to know who they are. And they're going to have to talk, and they're going to have to meet people, and they're going to have to determine, based on what they see, potentially on your website, whether they want to do that. So big responsibility. So websites are increasingly important in this, in the process of a prospect coming to your church. Don't think that they aren't coming to your website before they walk in the door, because they are. This is especially true of schools as well. And we can, you know, probably have a whole episode on that too. Maybe when Gail is on the show next, we can talk about that too. But the importance of websites for schools and how schools can use the website. So those go ahead, Sally.
I was just going to say, I've been sharpening my pencil and taking diligent notes here, because I'm going to be at a church ministry workshop this weekend coming up for our Minnesota district, presenting on the 5 W's of church and school websites. So hopefully I'll be able to share some of this information and also get feedback from the people in my workshop about what they're doing on their church websites. So
beautiful.
Looking forward to that.
Beautiful.
Yeah, good timing for me. Thanks for the topic.
Yep. These 5 don'ts, and there are 5 do's and all kinds of other stuff, are also on a product that was produced, I'm just going to do a little hawking if you don't mind, Sally, called the Evangelism Toolbox. It's a DVD put out by the Wells Commission on Evangelism. I'm not even sure how much it costs. I suppose I should have looked that up before I promoted it. But this is a DVD put out by the Evangelism Office, and I've got a segment on there on evangelistic websites, but there's all kinds of other great stuff on there. Reaching out to people in the parish area, so conducting a canvas, new resident outreach, managing the prospect list, building awareness in the community, advertising services and events. And there's a whole section on early childhood ministry, how that's becoming a very important part of a church's outreach program, planning an ECM program, recruiting and promotion, reaching families of students, all kinds of good stuff. So we'll put a link to this in the show notes as well, the Evangelism Toolbox DVD. Well, I'm really happy about the interview that we have this week, Sally. We had a chance to sit down with Pastor Ken Fisher of Risen Savior Lutheran Church in Milwaukee. Ken is the brains behind, yeah, there are a lot of brains behind this site, I suppose, but he was really the person who got it off the ground. Whataboutjesus.com, it's a site that I think is doing some wonderful things in the area of providing good, solid information about our Savior to people who don't know who he is. Whataboutjesus.com. If you've never visited the site, go there now. I think there's great stuff that you'll be able to use in your own personal ministry to other people, and churches can obviously use this as well. So let's listen to our interview with Pastor Ken Fisher as he talks about whataboutjesus.com. Joining us today is Pastor Ken Fisher from Risen Savior Lutheran here in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Welcome, Ken. Thanks for joining us.
Glad to be here.
We wanted to talk to you a little bit about a website that has gotten a lot of interest, I think, over the past few years in our synodical circles. I know there was a big push, and there were balloons and all kinds of things that were, I think, around the launch of whataboutjesus.com. And you were kind of the idea man behind, I think, whataboutjesus.com, right?
Yeah, it goes back all the way to about the year 2000 and working with Bob Hartman saying,
right,
do we really have a place for the unchurched just to go to learn the basics about who Christ is and what he's done for them?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's when it started.
Okay. Tell us a little bit about yourself, where you serve, and how you got kind of hooked up with Bob and the whataboutjesus.com program.
Well, I came to him with the idea, and Bob said, that's a great idea. How would you like to do it?
That's right. That's how it works in the Senate,
yeah,
right?
Isn't it? As soon as I said, this is something that I really think we need to do, Bob said, that sounds wonderful. I think you should do it.
Right.
And we started with a Thrivent grant that helped us start the initial planning. We did a lot of research just talking to the unchurched and getting a sense from people who were recently brought into the church as to how the site might be developed and what the site might have. So it goes back to a lot of research we did in about the year 2001. We launched soon after that.
Mm-hmm. And that research, what did that, you know, how did you go about doing that?
It was kind of fascinating. We actually sat down with a group of people from a church in Las Vegas who were new to the faith, and we asked them, you know, if there was a site that would, you know, have helped you in your journey to understand what Christ has done for you and to grow in your Christian faith, what would it have on it? Mm-hmm. And they gave us a lot of insights. At the time, we kind of thought, well, we don't want to promote the wells. We want to promote, you know, the basics of the Christian faith, but we want to have solid answers that you actually can trust. Mm-hmm. So we thought if we just have that and we kind of keep the wells really in the background. And one of the most interesting things that people said in those interviews was, you know what? We won't trust answers just from any website. We want to know that there's a real denomination behind mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. and that it's solid and secure. So it kind of changed the way we thought about it. We really do see it as a companion to the Wells website, but we also want people to know where it's coming from, because their idea of this was, look, if I go for medical answers on the web, there's all kinds right. of quackery. I want to know that this website's actually endorsed by the Medical Association of America or someone that I can verify the answers are really true right. and
so
sound.
So it's not just Ken Fisher Ministries.
Right.
There's actually something behind it. How did you come up with the name? Where'd that come from?
Yeah, we brainstormed a lot about what actually was available. At the time, there were not a lot of sites that were just dedicated to outreach for a first-time visitor or someone who's just searching for answers. And so we looked at something. We wanted to find something that was sort of allowing people to be inquisitive without saying, we've got all the answers, you know, and just saying, what about Jesus? And it just sort of came to us, and we had to search what ones were available. There mm-hmm. weren't a lot of addresses available. It was about the time that people were really buying up a lot of website addresses.
Right. So we're pretty fortunate there to yeah. find that. Yeah.
Yeah. Tell us about the website, Pastor Fisher. What are some of the key things that we would find if we visited whataboutjesus.com?
Well, one of the things that are most popular, just questions that people have. You know, some people submit questions. They're looking for life concerns. I think that's probably the most popular area of the site where people want to either get an answer for themselves, or they have a friend or someone else that they're trying to say, how do I give them some basic biblical, you know, answer to this question that they have? You'll find Bible studies. You'll find opportunity to sign up for devotions. You'll find worship helps, a book-by-book look at the whole Bible so you can see overviews of
yeah,
different
that's
books.
That's awesome, yeah.
And an online Bible course where people can interactively, you know, study the Bible, the basic doctrines of the Bible, just as they can study book by book.
Mm-hmm. And I also noticed there's a link for prayer requests. Do you guys have a prayer request team that actually prays for the people that submit prayer requests on the site?
Yes, and that is quite popular. Sometimes it's gotten almost overwhelming for our team because we really don't want them just to have a, you know, just, oh, I got this, but really to also try to respond, if possible, to tell the person that they've received this from, if we're given a responding email, that we are praying for you. And sometimes they'll even tell them what they've been praying for so that they have a chance to witness to them a little bit about the truth of Scripture and the power that God has.
A lot of the content, not a lot, but you know, some of the content, the devotional content especially, that really came out of the whataboutjesus.com project is kind of a centerpiece to our streams program at this point in our media streaming, where we do the where we have an audio podcast. Mike Hintz does the audio for the devotions themselves, and those are extremely popular. Plus, the content is made available through RSS feeds to anybody who has a final website. So I think that that ministry is just wonderful, and that's maybe not necessarily directed at the prospect or the person questioning, you know, who Jesus is, but really our own members. So there's a double blessing there.
We see a lot of our own members have signed up for the daily devotions. And what happens, we did a survey a couple of years ago in which we said, hey, are these effective? Are you enjoying them? How can we improve the site? How can we improve what we're doing? And we were just overwhelmed with the high level of response to it, the percentage of people that responded. To the simple survey, but also the kinds of comments. We had literally 30 pages of wow. small print of comments of people relaying to us their stories about how they're using the devotions. And what we found in many places, like people were getting them in the morning at their office, and if they thought this was a particularly good devotion for someone else, a friend, they were sending it on.
Right.
People were sending it on to their whole office, forwarding it through their office email system.
Wow, cool.
It really was very encouraging to the writers who do this really on a volunteer basis.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, what kind of pool of writers do you have, and do you do this? Is it kind of just-in-time devotions, or do you have a slew of this kind of stacked in the back closet someplace and you pull them out?
No, we really want them to be timely. And so what we do is we're asking authors to take certain months and then have a number of devotions during that month. We really teamed with adult discipleship. And in that sense, it's a nice parish, mm-hmm. services project, because adult discipleship's coordinators then said, here's some writers that we think and some coordinators that we think would enjoy this. And we really have found some authors over time that really get it. They understand how to speak to the unchurched, but
right.
at the same time, what we find is they're speaking to the unchurched. They're often speaking very clearly to those who are churched, and they appreciate the simple, straightforward law gospel message.
Yep, it's certainly been a blessing to me. I listen to it in the car every morning, every Monday through Friday when I drive into the office. And I made a commitment at the beginning of the year that I'm going to do it, through the entire year. And they're short. They don't take a lot of time. They're 5 to 10 minutes tops, and typically very relevant. And the prayer at the end just kind of gets your day going, really well. So really appreciate those. How do you find people? You mentioned the use of daily devotions, but if a Wells member who might be listening, how would they basically use the site as purely an evangelical tool? Yeah, how have you seen that happen over the course of the years?
I think a lot of people use it for their own personal witnessing tools. So let's say I'm trying to share with someone in my office and I'm thinking, how do I do this? What can I say to them? So they're sometimes printing off articles and sharing them as something they can hand out on specific issues. I think other people are just leaving the cards around the office, whataboutjesus.com, or just pointing people to it and using it in that way, because it can be used in either way as a resource for those who are Wells or concerned Christians who want to grow in their faith. We see a lot of young Christians new to the Wells, new to their Christian faith, also just strengthening that faith. And we want to serve both purposes.
Right.
I can definitely see the timeliness of the material there, things like life concerns. I see your headlines right now say, what about my job? What about my retirement?
Yeah.
And, just being really timely with the topics. And I know your daily devotions have reflected, events in the news and things like that at times when we're all in times of trouble or whatever. So I just see that as a really powerful tool. I'm wondering if you have plans for the future. Is the site going to be adding anything new or anything like that?
Absolutely. There's always something new in the works. We're working on a whole new section on great chapters of the Bible and on some of the statements of Jesus in the Beatitudes. And those two series are being developed right now, as well as just promotion. It's an ongoing challenge just to let people know, the unchurched especially, know about the site. We're putting a big promotion together right now, working with a number of our churches who have attended the Connecting to Community seminars, mm-hmm. and we're going to offer them kits that will be able to be used at their church or at fairs. And again, this is a nice dovetail with an outreach effort you might be doing in your community to be able to give away some of the items that kind of link people to What About Jesus. So that's a big promotion that's coming up, as well as we've developed a commercial, a 30-second commercial, professional commercial, that raises the question of what about, what about my retirement, and then finally, what about Jesus? What's at the heart of what we really need? And so that commercial that is really designed with a media consultant to help us, to really try to touch where the unchurched are, is been funded with a special grant, and we're going to be looking at markets or media markets around the country with little pushes, and the first one's actually going to be in the Milwaukee area, and we hope before it'll be building up to Easter. That's what it's looking like through Time Warner Cable, and there'll be literally
great.
Hundreds of these commercials shown, 30-second ads, and then it'll link them to the website, and that's how those faces picture in that you see right now coming across.
Mm-hmm. Is this in cooperation with congregations? Are they funding it, or is it Thrivent Grants, or how's this working?
No, there's a special grant from a private foundation
that's
behind that.
Great.
And then what we'll be doing is as we get into an area, we're going to let the local congregation know about it, give them the link to the site, give them materials they can use for bulletin inserts, and try to help the local congregation see this as something that then can connect people to their local congregation. We're going to encourage them to put it on their own website and kind of link people to the two.
Mm-hmm. When is that going to happen again?
It's starting this Easter. We are intending to have one in the Milwaukee area this Easter, and then we're examining other markets for cost, and we'll be moving it around the country to places where we have sort of a concentration of Wells churches. Mm-hmm. Is our intent.
Okay, so I assume some communication is going to go out to congregations to link to that. I assume that'll be on the web, and
yep.
Congregations should be putting links to whataboutjesus.com on their websites anyway, and I know a lot of them do.
Absolutely.
That's awesome. Great.
I was in my office yesterday working with our intern for the What About Jesus site on those materials.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Ken, when you sat down, in 2000 and talked with Bob Hartman about this, and now as you look at it today, 9 years later, is it what you thought it would be? Did it go in a different direction? Is it, was it a success? How do you view it today?
It's beyond what I kind of imagined it would have been at that time, and it's just continued to grow. And the number of people that are using it and the impact that it's having, it's surprised me, really. At one time, I kind of thought that the internet could kind of be a luxury item, a sort of another mm-hmm. nice thing to do, a bell or a whistle. But today,
right.
I really believe it's integral to our opportunity that God's giving us in this century.
Right. That's where the people are. So wonderful. Thanks so much, Ken, for joining us. And boy, continued blessings on that work. I think that's a ministry that is just a kind of a shining star, and an approach that our people in technology would certainly look at, saying, "Hey, this is a place we ought to be spending some energy and some time," and whataboutjesus.com is a great example of that. So blessings on your work, and thanks for joining us.
You're welcome.
Sally, it was wonderful for Ken to sit down. You can tell that he had this on his heart for quite a while, and now he's made it a reality, and I think it's turned out even better than he thought.
I agree, Martin, and I'm excited about all the great RSS content that we can get from the What About Jesus site.
Yeah.
And again, just to plug
for,
if you aren't using the daily devotions that Pastor Fisher talked about, you really should subscribe to them for your personal reading and also incorporate them into your church or school website. Really mm-hmm. great stuff.
That's awesome. Yeah, written and also in audio format now, in podcast
format. That's correct.
I listen to one of those on the way into work every day. So great, great content. Let's turn now to our picks of the week. Sally, what's your pick this week?
Well, I've got a pick for all our teacher listeners, and that's a blog that I'd like to turn them on to. It's called Free Technology for Teachers, and you can find it at www.freetech4teachers.com, and we'll have a link in our show notes to that. This blog was the 2008 EduBlog Award winner for Best Resource Sharing Blog, and let me tell you, there's some amazing resources. They probably post 15 to 20 different blog posts a week at least, with links to all kinds of web-based resources that teachers can incorporate into their classroom. And down the left-hand column of the blog are links to some of their favorite, organized by different subject areas, social studies, English, science resources, all different subject areas featured there. Just loaded with great stuff. If you are an RSS user, you'll want to subscribe to this blog and just do a daily browse of the different resources they're putting out there. I bet you you'll find at least one or two things that you can use right away in your classroom this week. It's just a really loaded website, and you're going to find a lot of great resources there. They also have a subscription via email, so if you aren't using RSS, you can get updates from the site via email as well. So check it out at freetechforteachers.com.
Very good. Sally, as I think about the web and who really are the greatest beneficiaries of all this stuff that's on the web, teachers really come to mind. The ability to go out and get this kind of information and pull together all these kinds of resources was really impossible before the advent of the web. And teachers who really aren't technologically savvy or on the web are at a disadvantage, I would think, at this point. So they're missing out on these kinds of resources and the ability to enhance their teaching abilities or the content that they can bring into the classroom, and then also obviously introducing their kids to all the learning experiences that are available on the web. This is great stuff, and I'm thankful to you, Sally, for constantly keeping these kinds of resources in front of our listeners. Although our listeners are obviously those people that are interested in this kind of stuff, I think our listeners probably have a responsibility, those that are teachers, to spread the word across their faculties.
Absolutely. You know, it's cool for teachers to see the light bulbs come on with students. It's always a neat experience when they really get it. And for me, it's really cool to see teachers get it. In our school, we have a veteran teacher, 25 years, that she's been in the classroom, and she's using a smart board for the first time this year. I visited her classroom last week, and she's like, "Oh, I just downloaded something new from the internet, and the kids are going to work on it today. You have to come and see." You know, she's just so enthusiastic about the technology, the whole setup in her classroom and everything. It's really exciting to see.
Beautiful, beautiful. My pick, actually, I've got three picks, if you'll permit me. They'll be quick, though. They're all basically doing the same thing in different ways and on different platforms. Back in episode 55, we talked a little bit about Cory Doctorow's article called Writing in the Age of Distractions. And really what that article was talking about is the ability to focus on what you're writing. He's a writer. He's an author and a journalist. And many of our listeners are obviously the same. Every one of the pastors who are listening to this podcast, you'll write something every week or a couple things every week. And the ability to write without distraction is really key, because the computer is just this black hole of distractions. You get on the computer and you have email and instant message and RSS feeds and all these things popping up at us. And one of the things that Cory Doctorow advised in his article is distraction-free writing. And that one of those is getting just a plain and simple text editor to write. None of the bells and whistles of Microsoft Word, where you may be tempted to apply styles and do bullets and all this other stuff. Just write. And I've got three programs here. I'll do it in a little bit different way, but they basically blank your screen so that all you have on that screen is a black field and white or green text, and you just type. There's nothing popping up at you. There's no formatting you need to do. You just put finger to keyboard, and you put your brain on the subject matter, and you just write. So they're basically simple text editors. So three of them. One of them is just launched recently, and it's kind of web 2.0-ish, although it's not on the web. It uses Adobe Air as the platform, which is what's called a runtime engine. It sits in the background of your computer and then just takes over at a certain point. It allows a lot of funky and cool things to be done, but it also allows things like this. It's called Focused, and we'll put all of these links in the show notes. I believe, let's see, what is his URL? I'm going to go here quick so that I don't mislead our listeners. Here we go. It's kind of funky. Literally, spreadingfunkiness.com/focused. So he's just I don't know if he's a professional developer or not, but he's put this together, and it's not all that complicated, but basically it blanks your screen and you start typing, called Focused. Simple text editor, runs on Adobe Air, blacks out your entire screen, you just you and your text is basically all it is. Now, some of these things have been around for a long time, and one that's been on the Windows side, Windows only, is something called Darkroom, and the URL for that is they.misled.us. They misled us, and I think that's a political statement, /Darkroom. The application is called Darkroom, /Room.
Dash
Room, I'm sorry. Yes, Dark Room. and does essentially the same thing, just Windows only, blacks out your entire screen. You just have green text. It's the old terminal look, and you just have very limited controls. You can save. I think you can do some bullets and those kinds of things, a little bit more, you know, a few more features in here, but they're totally in the background. If you don't want to use them, you don't need to. And for those of you on the Mac platform, not to leave you out, one that's been around, very cool, is called Write Room, W-R-I-T-E, Room. It's from Hog Bay Software. The first two are free. Focused and Darkroom are free, and I think Write Room has a free version. But if you want to use some of the features, I think you have to pay $29 or something like that. But that's purely on the Mac side, and it's got the Mac look. Hogbaysoftware.com/products/WriteRoom will get you there. So all of these products essentially do the same thing in a little bit different way, but the concept is exactly the same. Clear the decks, put finger to keyboard, just your mind and your computer.
So a couple of questions for you, Martin. Does Adobe Air run on the Mac? Do you know?
Yes. Yeah. Focus would be cross-platform. So the first one was cross-platform. The second one, Darkroom, was Windows only. Write Room was Mac only. So I'll give you the... You get your choice. Actually, Focused, I think, will work on Linux as well. So if you're a Linux user, I think you can run Adobe Air on that as well.
Excellent. And not really a question, but a comment. You must be a lot more self-disciplined than me, because I like all those distractions. I don't know if I could give them up.
Oh, I know. But productivity goes down as a result.
Yeah.
Maybe you're wired differently than I am. Maybe that's totally possible. So I just need nothing but those letters on my keyboard and thinking about what I'm going to write. And then you all can always format later, and that's really the point. Write, and then throw it into Word or whatever, and then you can do your fancy styles and bullets and all that other stuff. So
going back to that classroom slant on things, when I've taught kids word processing, all they want to do is push all those buttons.
Exactly.
They've got green text and cursive font at 24-point size, and it just drives me nuts. Just write the words, kids, and so maybe this would be a good way to teach them some word processing skills, have them type a paragraph and then copy it into Word or something and do their editing and stylizing afterwards.
Yeah, you still got to give them that fun stuff or they're going to tune out. So have them write with the goal of, hey, you'll get to do some of that fun stuff, push the buttons, once you're done writing the real stuff. So
there you go.
Good application.
All right.
All right, what's going on in the Wells world that we want to tell our listeners about?
Well, I'll be quick with this one because we've talked about it before, but the Wells Youth Rally is going on this summer in Ames, Iowa. I believe it's July 8th through 11th, and they opened up registration this past Monday for the Youth Rally, and I can tell you that in the past, the Youth Rally has filled up, and there's been disappointed people who ended up on a waiting list and didn't get to attend because they didn't get their registration in early. So check out the registration page. You can find it at wellsyouthrally.net. Registration has to be done by the youth group leader first, so individual kids can't come and register on their own. Has to be done for the entire group by the youth group leader first, and now's the time to get those registrations in.
Yep, absolutely. Don't wait.
No. Nope.
Don't wait. As I mentioned at the top of the show, one of the joys, I think, of doing the show is the amount of feedback that we get. And it seems like for the last, 3-4 months, Sally, we've been getting probably more than we can actually share on the show. So let's go through our feedback. We've got like 6 or 7 items here.
Yep. Starting with a great one I heard from a friend of mine down in Atonement and Plano, Texas. Brent Nimmers there sent me a link to a CNET review of online photo editors. In the past, I know I've shared information about Picnic.com as being a place where you can go online, work in the cloud, and do quite a bit of photo or image editing without having to have any local software installed. This review, which we'll include a link to in the show notes, covers Picnic as well as about 15 other online photo editors. And you'll see pros and cons for each. You can actually look at a slideshow that shows you screenshots of each, and just really focuses on the mechanics of it, which ones can do layered images, how large of a resolution you can use with the different image editors and that kind of thing. Very, very powerful tools out there that are quite impressive. I think you'll enjoy this review and maybe find some new nuggets that you'd like to check out yourself. So thanks, Brent, for that.
That is an awesome list. One that I've been using lately is Pixlr, and it's on that list, P-I-X-L-R. Have you used that at all, Sally?
Haven't tried that one.
I'm a big Photoshop fan, and this is about as close as you will get to Photoshop online. It's totally awesome. It has almost all the same filters and layers, and I don't know how they do it, actually, when they do this online. It's all Flash-based. There's no size limit of the files. Obviously, a lot of these are more for web editing than they are for, the traditional, what you'd find in a magazine or something like that, which requires a little larger file size. But it's amazing, what some of these can do. So there's no excuse for those 20K or 200, let's say 200K images that you've got on your website that take 10, 20 seconds to load, and you see it kind of window shade down the screen. Clean those up. Use these tools.
Definitely. We also heard from Steve Mathwick, who's at St. John's in Oak Creek, Wisconsin. And Steve wrote with a follow-up question from one of our previous episodes. I'm not sure when it was. It was back in November that we had Brian Schaefer on. Brian is with FinalWeb.net, and he was telling us about some of the new features that were going to be added to the FinalWeb toolset, including a custom template generator. And Steve was wondering about an update on FinalWeb's progress to getting that live and available for their customers. So we contacted Brian, and he indicated that that will be going live on Thursday of this week. So tomorrow, FinalWeb customers should have a custom template generator function added to their website. So look for that and give us some feedback if you try it out. We have done a bit of beta testing with it, and we're excited about the possibilities there and anxious to hear how our customers are using it. So.
And Sally, you're very good at sending out those announcements as well to those people that are subscribed to the discussion board that's related to our final web presence on Welsh.net University. Maybe a good time to pump that a little bit. If people aren't aware of that and they're a final web user, how do they sign up for that? Is there a web location? I'm going to put you on the spot.
You bet. You can get to it at Welsh.net/jump/WNU web hosting. So Wellsnet University acronym, WNU, and then web hosting.
There's a link there, right?
Right. And you're going to find loads of tips and tricks. You're going to find video tutorials, free images for your banner area on your website, and lots more there. It's a really growing community, and we get great feedback and constantly updating things and adding new resources.
Okay. I wanted to share with everybody a group that's formed over in one of these social networks called LinkedIn. We've mentioned it before. It's similar to Facebook. LinkedIn is probably more geared for professionals. That's at least how it started. I think it's evolving, and you can now. We talked with Andy Thimer a while back, and he had created a group called In the Wells. And what's happened there is there were actually two Wells groups. Wells Members was another group that had kind of formed independently. And recently the founder of that came to me and said, why don't you take this group over? I'm not doing much with it. And what made sense to me is to try and combine those groups. So we've done that. So Wells Members is going to go away if you're a member of that. And In the Wells is the one that's going to remain, and all of the Wells folks are going to join in that group. So if you're a LinkedIn member, look for In the Wells and join that if you want to associate or link to other Wells members. And there's some discussions going on there, so a great group to keep in mind if you're on LinkedIn.
And just a little plug that we have a link to it in our Wells Tech sidebar on our show notes page. So if you're looking for In the Wells, you can get to it from our Wells Tech show note page.
WellsTech.wells.net.
There you go. All right. Next, I wanted to feature a little bit of our listserv chatter. We've had some discussions going on the Wells Tech listserv, which is basically an email group that can ask questions and share information for the techies at heart. We heard from Carl Henslin from St. Mark in Green Bay, Wisconsin, and he was generous enough to share a little program that he developed for the web. It's a memory work test generator. And how it works is you put in the text of the memory passage that you want your students to learn. Let's say you're teaching in a Lutheran grade school or high school or even a catechism class or whatever. And it will generate the text with blanks to fill in certain areas. And you basically give it a percentage if you want only 10% of the text to be eliminated, or if you want 75% of the text to be eliminated. It will take out as much as you tell it to. And then it'll generate it multiple times on the page. So you literally could just print the page and cut it apart and have 10 copies of it or whatever to distribute to your students for them to fill in the blanks and complete their memory work for the day. Really powerful little tool, and Carl's looking for feedback on it. So if you give it a try and you have ideas for him, then feel free to contact him and give him ideas for enhancing it as well. And thanks very much, Carl, for sharing that with the community.
Yep, thanks, Carl.
The other thing that's going on the listserv is a discussion of open source student management software, and there's been a couple of posts related to that. So if you're looking for some type of open source solution for student management, you may want to check out those posts as well.
Very good.
Let's see. Next up, we have some feedback from Perry Lund. He's at Grace in Oskaloosa, Iowa, and I did a much better job with that than the last time I tried to say that. So I was a little nervous there. Anyway, just to mention that he's added some more information about audio equipment and recording process to our Wells Tech Wiki, so another site that you can visit and get great information and also add to. The Wells Tech Wiki is at wellstech.wetpaint.com. And Perry just put out specs on their equipment and their recording process, and you may want to check it out if you're interested in getting started with podcasting sermons or doing any kind of audio recording in your congregation. Great information there.
Thanks, Perry.
And then finally, we heard from Gail Potratz in a completely different way. Gail responded to us with a pound Wells Tech on Twitter. And for those of you that aren't familiar, Twitter is a microblogging site. And if you use pound Wells Tech in your Twitter tweet, then it will feed into a Wells Tech feed where we kind of combine all of those comments and have a Wells Tech conversation. And what Gail shared with us there on Twitter was information about the fact that the Large Catechism is actually recorded in audio format and available for free download at LibriVox.org. LibriVox is a website that Ryan Rosenthal pointed us to. We actually talked about it in last week's show. It's a place where there's free audio of public domain books. And I actually did a search on the site for Martin Luther as the author and found 11 different works, some of them in German as well as English, that you can download and listen to on the LibriVox site. So check out LibriVox and the Large Catechism and other Martin Luther works. We'll have links in our show notes. And thanks, Gail, very much for sharing that.
If you need your Luther fix or your German fix, that's the place to go. Yeah. If you'd like to follow us on Twitter, Sally or myself, we are there. And again, Pound Wells Tech would be a great way to get our attention as well, because that gets fed right into the Wells Tech page. But my Twitter handle, whatever you call it, I don't know, Sally, is it handle? Is it screen name? I'm not sure what they use today. M. Spriggs, very creative. And Sally, you are?
I am Wells Tech Trainer.
Wells Tech Trainer. So no exotic names for us, but if you'd like to follow us on Twitter, that would be great. Thanks for the feedback to everybody. If you want to contribute to the show, and we wish that you would, go to wellstech.wells.net, send us an email at wellstech@wells.net. There's all kinds of ways. Love to hear voicemail. The phone number is there on the Wells Tech site. All kinds of ways to do that. Well, we have taken more than our fair share of our listeners' time this week. We begged their indulgence. We had a great interview with with Pastor Fisher. We had a great conversation about don'ts. Next week, we're going to return to our discussion of Here Comes Everybody by Clay Shirky, a wonderful book about social media and the ability for each and every one of us to make ourselves heard and known on the internet. That has obvious ministry and personal evangelism implications. The chapter that we'll be talking about is chapter number 4, Publish, Then Filter. So if you'd like to follow along with us, grab your Clay Shirky book, read chapter 4, and join the conversation next week. Let's close the show with Koine, a frequent Wells artist that we have music for on the show, and we'll be listening to their song, Crown Him with Many Crowns, very appropriate in this Lenten season, from their first album called Koine. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We will talk to you next week.
Victorious in the strife of those he came to save.